special number 23370, reel 16.
Hi.
So the Colonel Bogey March is, as you mentioned off tape, the march that we recognise with the Bridge Over the River Choir.
That's right, yes, yeah.
But I haven't heard the version. Bullshit,
it
was all the band could play.
Yeah, well, that's all it was. Bullshit was all the band could play. Bullshit, they played it night and day. And it goes on with quite a verse, etc. But that's all it was. But it was poking fun at the Japs, of course. But as I say, this interpreter picked up that there was something a little bit astray, and it caused a few anxious moments until it was all quiet and down again. But the concert party was a howling success as far as we were concerned, because it allowed us a little bit of conversation with some of the other blokes as to how they'd got on, and had news of other people. Some are dead and some are, you know, still alive, etc. But there was some communication, and that was good. That it made a big difference.
Was it possible at this stage to hear how the war was going outside of your little area?
We had some indications, because the bombers coming over from India were following the railway line. And they were, that was part of their track, and you could see the Viper trails, etc. They were very high up, but they were coming over regularly, and of course that was a very good indication from our point of view that the things were starting to turn and go in our direction. But as far as authentic news was concerned, no, we had none, which perhaps was one of the reasons for a bit of the depression or low ebb that we had prior to this. But of course, with these bombers going over, that was a very good indication from our point of view.
But, you mentioned earlier on that someone had said to you that the Japanese weren't going to win the war within 100 years' time.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You know, own Australia. And that was in March of 43,
That's right.
Speedo, as I understand, was between April and November of 43.
That's right, yeah.
Given the fact that it seemed that they wouldn't win the war at that point, too, some of them at least, how did it affect the way that the Japanese treated you when you could see vapor trails coming over?
They were a bit sullen about it, as much as anything. You could only assume that they could see that things weren't going too well as far as they were concerned, because these bombers were coming over on a regular basis and weren't being interfered with. So it was quite a big thing, as far as we were concerned, and was starting to get to a lower point as far as they were concerned. But as we got further into that the end of that year, and we moved on. We went up to the 105 camp and joined up with the group up there, and they had some fairly authentic news that they used to get through there, and that was when we started to pick up on a lot of the news then, that the Germans were out of the desert, and it was starting to look as though the invasion was going to take place in Europe, and of course Hitler had a bit of a setback going into Russia and that sort of thing, and of course the angst was starting to build up apart from the problems they'd had in the Philippines and that sort of thing, they were starting to pick up again.
Did this news bolster your spirits?
Oh yes, it was always a big help.
There would, I understand, have been still quite a big degree of uncertainty as to what would happen to you, particularly if the war went against the Japanese.
Yeah. It was always a worry right from the jump that are they going to be vindictive or what is going on? But that came to the fore quite a bit later on. But the point that I made about them being a bit sullen, it's about the best way to describe it, when these bombers were coming over, there was some indication that they weren't going to take it too well anyway. So it was always something that was at the back of your mind, but the big thing was to make sure that you acted at the right, right at the right time to get out of it all, but how that was going to develop, you didn't know.
Can you tell me when it was that you realised the railway was nearly completed? I understand it around about November.
Yes, that's right. November 43 was virtually when it was completed. It was through to the Three Pagoda Pass, which was 135 kilo mark, the groups that had worked from the other end, from the Thailand end, they had brought it through up to that point. So it was virtually complete. It was running, and it was just after that that the first of our people left. The sick ones left and went through to Tamarkan. But from November on through to the end of February, we were at 105 kilo camp, and we were engaged in firewood cutting. Again, this amount that you had to do each day, you were given that a cubic metre of wood out of a tree and stacked up alongside the railway line. That was your quota. And while we were doing this, our friend Kakiuchi came back into the picture, and he knew where we were working, where our group was working, and he used to give a cock-a-doodle-doo on his hooter as he was coming up towards where we were working, and as he went through, he would pick us out and chuck out packets of cigarette to us. So this Kakiuchi bloke was an absolute gem as far as we were concerned, but it would have been the brotherhood, or whatever you like, of the sea that did it. It was quite a thing. It's always remained with me that this bond that was established between us was there right to the end, and as far as I know, that he was killed in a bombing raid that blew his engine apart, etc. So, sad as though it was, that was the way war went.
How, being chaps from the Perth, how did you interact with the soldiers or army in appearing?
Oh, fine, no worries.
Was there any competitiveness?
Oh, yeah, you always had things like they used to chide us about pulling the plug and that sort of thing on the ship, and letting it go down, and you didn't fight very hard, all this sort of thing. But our answer to that was, well, the blokes from the, because these were all 8th Div blokes, and the rivalry goes between divisions, of course, and we always used to say, well, the blokes from the 6th Div that were on Crete, etc., they sent us a message right at the last and said, don't rescue those bastards, pull the plug rather than do that. Yeah, that sort of thing. But, yeah, they were a saviour to us. They were very good to us, really. And because they were, when we were picked up, we had desperate need, and they fulfilled it. There was never any problem with them. They were very good to us.
Given this bond with the Japanese,
Kakiuchi.
What are the other guards? I mean, I understand nicknames are common. Did Kakiuchi have one?
No, we just used to call him Kakiuchi, that's all. You had the boy Bastard and all this sort of thing. They all had nicknames, but one little episode that just before we left the 100, we were doing this business of carting the ballast miles and miles and dropping a bag full of it, etc. And one of the guards, a little bloke, youngster, he was sunning himself one day in one of the gravel pits. Beautiful day, just like a spring morning, and he decided he'd have a because he couldn't walk up and down the line with everybody, he was going to stay in the gravel pit and he was going to have a bit of sunbathe. Unfortunately for him, the sergeant came out from the camp and caught him, and before the sergeant said a word to him, he went off back into the jungle and cut himself a slice of bamboo rod. And he came out and he beat that poor little sod. From the time that he got there until the bloke had turned around and put all his clothes and uniform back on, just beat him constantly the whole time. And he was black and blue by the time that he got his clothes on. We didn't have any time for them, not at all. They were just too cruel for us.
Once the railway had been completed, were you able to sort of stand back and appreciate what you'd done?
No, only too glad to get out of the place. But yes, there were some beautiful moments. This 100 kilo camp and at the 85 kilo camp, they were magic spots as far as the beauty of the forest was concerned. And sometimes these things just catch you. But it's one reason I would never ever go back there, is that what you have in your mind's eye of those places, you would never ever find again. Simply because everything has changed. Places have grown, overgrown, that sort of. So you'd never see it again. So you'd only disappoint yourself if you went back, you know. People have said to me, "Have you ever been back to have a look?" And I said, "No way." You'd only disappoint yourself, I think, if you went back.
Given the fact that you'd made this railway and all of the effort that you put into it, how did you feel about the achievement?
Oh, there was a certain pride in having done what had always been thought of as a hopeless situation, a hopeless task, that you couldn't do it. And you'd always been told that English race or that sort of thing couldn't work in the tropics. We found out that you could, and you did, and you had to. But I guess there was a certain amount of pride in that sense, but I suppose it was only a sort of a foolish pride. It didn't, there's nothing really to it.
How long were you on the line then, and after its completion?
1 year, 1 month, and 1 day. That was we were up there on the 27th of January, and we came out on the 28th of February. So that was the length of time. It was probably the longest year I've ever put in my life. I just felt that way. And when we came out, and we finally went up from 105 to Tamarkan, you marvelled at it as you went along, that the bloody thing even worked, you know. As for going across some of these bridges, I don't mind telling you, I was shit scared, because there are some of these bridges that they built up against the side of a mountain and pushed into the mountain. They were absolutely wonderful pieces of engineering, but knowing what went into them, you were dead scared that it was going to collapse on you, and either that or you could imagine a bomb being dropped at the wrong moment. You know, that was the sort of problems we had because of the previous effect of bombing as we were coming into Moulmein made you wonder a little bit, you know, as to how much these people know about what's going on. So they were, but yes, there was a certain amount of satisfaction, I suppose, that you had done it, you know, whether you liked it or not. And the horrendous cost, of course, was something that will be with us forevermore. So.
Are you able to give us an idea of what it was like knowing that you were leaving so many chaps behind?
Oh, yes, that's very sad. And it's not only sad, but more so than sad, it was heartbreaking that some of the blokes that you left behind, they gave up. And it was force of circumstances and the conditions that made them give up. And that was what a worthless waste of life. For these blokes, because there were some very talented people and very wonderful people, and not only in from the Navy point of view, but from the point of view of all the blokes that were there, because the cost was quite tremendous.
So you were back to Tamarkan?
Yes, we went back to Tamarkan. And that was regarded as a replenishment and a refurbishment. We got some more clothes there, and we were given these clothes because we were being sent to Japan. And we were checked out there with food, and we got some really good food there, things like eggs, and they were part of the normal food that was in the camp.
When were you told that you were going to Japan?
Well, that would have been within a matter of weeks from when we got there, because once we'd been checked out, then of course the selection started to be made again, that you're fit enough, so off you go. You got two arms, two legs, and a head, and that's it. Away you go.
Some people, I understand, wanted to go because one of their mates might be heading off.
Oh yes, there was that feeling particularly amongst the blokes off the Perth, that if you were going and the blokes you'd been with were going, then you wanted to go with them. You didn't want to be separated. It was very important that you keep the same group together. Mainly because you had a lot of confidence in each other, and you knew that if you got a good mate, well, then you could always had a better chance of getting through. At this time, this mate of mine that had the bad ulcered leg, he had gone up to Temukan ahead of me, and we were separated from that point on. But
given the fact that you had this concern about how the Japanese might treat you, what was the feeling then to know that you were actually going to Japan, and as I put it to other blokes, into the sort of lion's den, as it were?
I didn't have any great worries about it, because I had a brother over there somewhere, and so there was always that to look forward to. That, and if you were in the lion's den, I guess that you always had a chance to twist his tail or do something in that regard, or you had some sort of chance. Maybe it was a bit better civilization than what was being we were experiencing. There was always that chance that you were going to be a little bit better off, maybe. But fortunately or unfortunately, I never got there. So, but that's another part of the tale. But,
well, tell us what was to happen when you on preparation for your leaving.
Well, nothing very much, except that we were given a pretty good medical as far as your physical health was concerned. My biggest problem up to then had been this blasted malaria, keep on getting recurrences of it. I think at one stage I had, it used to take about 10 days to go through the hoops with malaria. And I was at one stage was doing having three infections a month, which meant that as you finished one period of 10 days, so you would start the next one, and 9 recurrences of this in 3 months was enough to make me sick of it anyway. But when we got up to Temukan, we got some bit better medicines given to us, as well as quinine. They had some stuff called, I think it was some plasmaquin, I think it was, which was helped to tone it down a bit. But it was there that I also picked up a bottle of quinine, and I kept that and used that as a prophylactic sense to keep the blasted malaria bug away. But yes, apart from the medical side, there was nothing much else done. They kitted us out with some more clothes. I think we were given, from memory, a pair of shorts and a shirt and a jacket. I don't know what the devil they call them. It was just a jacket anyway, but all in light tropical stuff, wasn't much chop for Japan, I'm afraid, but that was about all we got. But while you're in the tropics, it was quite sufficient. You know, there was no problem with it. But they sent us off then by train. We went through to Bangkok and paused in the railway siding there until they got us some food, and then we headed off again finished up at Phnom Penh in Indochina, or in whatever they call it now. And there we got on the one of the boats that plies up and down the Mekong, and we went down the Mekong, then of course down to Saigon, which was very pleasant going down there. But of course you got bundled in on top of a load of rice and everything else, so it was pretty uncomfortable. But at least it was a better way of travelling than being stuck in these bastard railway wagons. But that took us down to Saigon, and of course we got off the boat at Saigon and went into an old French Legion camp. Well, it would have been a French Legionnaires camp, but of course that at that time it was all they were neutral or neutralised. The French had come to some sort of an agreement with the Japs over it, and there are a lot of French people still living in that area, and they were quite friendly towards us. But again, the work in Saigon was the same old thing, down on the wharf or out on the aerodrome, digging ditches and that sort of thing. Any work at all that they wanted done, you had to do. And this, of course, was to be our port of embarkation to go to Japan, but of course they weren't getting out. The ships weren't getting out. They were just getting sunk as they, the Yanks had the port pretty well closed. And we copped quite a few air raids. Being where we were, and we were only two streets from the wharf, it was a bit hairy at times. The some of these bombs dropping just outside the camp. The camp not being very substantial, as I say, got a bit hairy.
What was the feeling then, that you might have made it through the jungle and all the horrors associated with the Burma Railway, but you might actually be done by your own side?
Oh yeah, well that was, you always had that risk all the time, but it was a risk that you had to, you know, be aware of and know that that it was, you know, whatever, that was a risk that was going to be there, irrespective of whether you could do anything about it or not. Which you couldn't do anything, but the French were quite friendly towards us as far as that was concerned. We got some pretty good food there. It was nothing to have a couple of packets of cigarettes chucked into the truck as you're going down the road, or you know, that sort of thing. So you had the population was relatively friendly to you, so. The sort of thing that you had to do was digging slit trenches and this sort of thing, because the bombing raids that were coming, they had to do something about the local population, and you had in these parks and those sort of places, you had all these big zigzag trenches that you had to dig for air raids and those sorts of things. And that was about the sum of the work there. It was only just, as you might put it, casual work. That's all it was.